The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we're here with Eric Jerome Dickey. He has a brand new book titled The Blackbirds. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
All right, now, Blackbirds, we find ourselves with four beautiful women in this book.
Yeah.
Actually, is in four parts also, isn't it?
Yes, in four parts. What I did is each part is by one of the characters' birthday. Each section is part of this part celebration, part dealing with conflict, family. And it turned out to be very nice, you know, having seeing how they celebrate not only each other's birthday, but they celebrate each other, you know, because every birthday is an adventure. They do something adventurous. They do something that is, I can see people reading a book and think, I want to do that for my birthday. From jumping out of planes, tandem, to cosplay. You know, they dress up like characters from High School Musical or something at one point. You know, and they just have fun. You know, and I envision these characters as being four women who are at the point of their life where they're the happiest, even with the conflict, they're the busiest, they're the happiest. It's before marriage, it's before they have children. And I don't even think they even realize where they are in their life at this point because they're so busy trying to achieve and move forward. But at the same time, they're still having fun doing it. So
beautiful women like in all of your books, aren't they? I mean,
well,
where do these women come from? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know what? Three of them actually came from previous novels. Kwanzaa Brown, one of the characters, came from Liar's Game 20 years ago. Well, almost 20 years ago. But she was a baby then. So she grew up and she's in college. She was engaged. Engagement just went south. And she's sort of emotionally dealing with that. She was with somebody for 6 years and then the engagement ended subtly, ended on a bad note. And for her birthday, she's like, this is my first birthday in 6 years. I'm not going to be with him. And her girls are kind of like, okay, are you going to keep talking about this guy? Are we going to move on? You know, and, Destiny Jones came from novel, Chasing Destiny, which was probably about 8 years ago. And she's in USC. She rocks a motorcycle. She rides a CBR. And some things happen in Chasing Destiny where now in the area she lives in, if she says her name, people know her name and they say, oh my God, you're that monster that did that horrible thing. So what she does is she uses a pseudonym and she's met someone using this pseudonym and she's grieving over like, at some point I have to tell him who I really am. I mean, cause she's gotten older. She had a growth spurt. She's changed her hairstyle, so she looks like a totally different person. And also the person she met, she went to private school and this individual went to public school. So they never, even though they probably grew up 2 miles away, they ran in different circles. And, one of the third character of the four, Erica Stockwell, was initially in Friends and Lovers, which came out in 1997, I believe.
Now, she's the older lady, isn't
she? Yeah, she's 33, yeah. Well, 30-ish, I think I leave it vague, yeah. Yeah, she's the older, she actually used to babysit Destiny. She's not that much older than Destiny, but she was old enough to babysit her. Wow, I guess since I've last written about her, she's been married, she married a minister, it was a horrible marriage, she's had cancer, she's in remission, she's a school teacher now, sixth grade, and back then she had a horrible relationship with her mother, but that remains. So they have 2 decades of animosity, and when she and her mother are on the page together, it's like World War IV. I mean, beyond World War III. I mean, it's like if you've seen the film Closer, how the dialogue is so biting and caustic. That's their relationship. It's almost as if, so far as insults, they're trying to one-up each other. And it's been that way for the last 2 decades. So, and the fourth character, Indigo, is I created her. She's Nigerian. She's dating a football player, NFL. She broke up with a Laker. She's Nigerian. She comes from money. That's the best way to put it. She has money. I mean, she owns the apartment building. She has a Jeep. She has a BMW. She has a motorcycle. But still, she manages to remain very down to earth. She still has dreams and goals. She wants to become an attorney. Her mom's an attorney. Her dad's an astute businessman. She wants to become an attorney and eventually be on the Supreme Court. This is her dream in her early 20s. You know, she comes out of the type of household where her mom and dad have already planned her life for her. So even as Indigo is dating, her mother's like, what is the purpose of this? You don't date for fun. It has to have a purpose. So if this is not the person, do not waste your time. You know, that's how she, her mom is with her, you know. Her mom has already planned out how many grandkids she's going to have, this, that, and the other, and
sometimes real life there.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of funny because when Indigo says, this is my body, I do what I want, and the mom says, well, this inheritance, this is my money. So, you know, so, and they go back and forth. She has the best relationship with her mother, that I've probably ever written about. They are the best of friends, and they confide in each other about stuff to a certain degree. It's still mother-daughter. They don't cross a particular line, which is totally the opposite of Erica's relationship with her mom. It's funny because a lot of parents do appear in here. The parents who were in novels 20 years ago. Destiny Jones' dad is a huge part of the novel. He has cancer, and he's going through radiation. She's there for him. And I guess I'm just depicting some of the characters growing up and some of the other characters getting older, you know, as it goes in real life. And for the girls who are growing up, giving them the real world issues and conflicts that we deal with. I mean, dating, trying to find your place in the world. You think you know who you want to be at 20, but then at 40, you're someone totally different. So this is who they are at 20. And for Erica, it's things haven't turned out the way she thought things would turn out. But that's how life goes. I mean, like, take me, for example. I never would have known I would have become a novelist. I thought I would always be an engineer. Things happen along the way. The next thing you know, it's like you're nudged or pushed or kicked into a different direction. I think that's a lot. I've tried to encapsulate the fullness of their lives and relationships in the novel.
So how did you come up with the people from past novels meeting in this novel?
The last novel I did, Naughtier Than Nice, I had a scene in it where Tommy McBroom, one of the characters, she lives across the street from Vince and Dana from Liar's Game. And I had her wave at Kwanzaa. And I said, okay, Kwanzaa's a teenager. And I said, wait a minute, that was 20 years ago. I mean, no, she's a little bit more than a teenager. I was like, wow, she can be in college. She could have gotten started a little late, but she can definitely be in college. And then I look back at Kwanzaa, Destiny Jones, and I say, everybody's grown up. And it was so funny because in my mind, up till I started working on this, they were all still babies and kids. But I guess it's like that in real life. You know, you have the relative that you, last time you saw them, they were a baby, then you see them again, they're an adult or an adult with a kid, and you go like, whoa, what happened? You know, well, yeah, I got older. You know, it's just sort of a nod to that, acknowledging that. Because Destiny's dad was late 30s, and now he's early 50s. You know, he's kicking 50. So I was like, wow. I don't know. I guess if you stay busy and you stay in the business, it just sort of creeps up on you that characters that you created 20 years ago are adults now. And then I started imagining their lives, definitely using where they were, the conflicts they had or their parents had. And so it would feel like organic, natural transition. This is where they are. Erica had certain issues at age 13. She was pregnant at 13. And that remains. I mean, I don't think that would ever go away. Destiny had things happen to her in Chasing Destiny. That would never go away because we are the things we carry. It's like we meet people who are, they talk about this thing that happened to me when I was 7 years old. We are the things that we carry, you know, and we have these watershed moments that change us. Cause like for Destiny, earlier when I first wrote about her in Chasing Destiny, her intent was to go to Harvard. You know, something happened and she didn't make it to Harvard. She's at USC, but she didn't make it to Harvard as she had planned. So I sat back and had to imagine, well, first remember, because I had to, even though I wrote the novels, I had to go back and flip through the pages again and go, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And then create this space where this story makes sense. All the parents in the novels have always lived near each other in Los Angeles. They didn't live in the same zip code, but they've all lived near each other. So to a certain extent, it made sense that they could be friends. They all live by each other. They're all LA girls. I put them together in the same apartment building. So that's, you know what I mean? So they live in a quad. Indigo owns it. And it's pretty much like an open door policy. They go back and forth to each other's apartments. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's one of those things like, okay, I'm gonna have company tonight. Don't come by, you know, and the message goes out to everybody and like, okay, we're not coming by. You know what I mean? You know, things like that.
Or you're just getting home from work. But, oh, hey, we have to go party. What are you doing?
That's it. You know, and they, right. They look out for each other. Yeah. I mean, when I wrote it, it was, Kwanzaa says she gets up, she vacuums someone's apartment. I was going to do a scene where somebody's doing everybody's laundry and stuff, but I didn't get to it. But in my mind, that was sort of how they are, because they're all in college. They're all busy. They all help each other. Destiny works. She works FedEx. She works late nights. She also has a side hustle where she sells Amazon Fire Sticks. And I had imagined her having a couple of other jobs that I had put in, but then took out. But she's busy. You know what I mean? She's busy. Erica is a school teacher, so she has a lot of homework to grade, a lot of assignments to do. And then we're on the other side of her dealing with cancer. So, I don't know. I think they all are very busy, but they all come together. Cause even later on, we refer to the apartment complex as the nest. You know, someone's leaving the nest. You know what I mean? But you know, they're going to come back. She's left the nest for the night. You know, a blackbird has left the nest. You know what I mean? So yeah, as I was working on it, first the challenge for me was for it to feel as if they're all friends. And then I was like, yeah, I like them. I like them together. You know, putting them in scenes together. They were just hilarious to me at times. I mean, even in the most serious moments. Earlier on in the novel, Kwanzaa runs into her ex-fiancé with somebody else, and she has a meltdown. She just, you know, and it just, you know, the girl's like, no. One girl is like, you know, no, leave him alone. The other girl's like, no, go get him. You know, so it was just kind of, if I could see it, it's just hilarious to me, because it's so, you know, it's just so serious, but they are so. And then they leave and go get drinks. You know, that's it. Okay, are we done with that? Okay, can we go get drinks now? You know, so it's sort of like that, you know. And I create these characters who they fight together, but they never fight each other. You know, no matter what's going on. And they throw insults back and forth at each other. No more, just like sisters would do. You know, sisters or brothers. And it's never two blackbirds and the other two who are best enough. They're all equally BFFs. You know what I mean? They're all equally BFFs. One moment Indigo's talking to Kwanzaa. She's arguing with Kwanzaa. Then the next, they just sitting down, eating cake, talking, you know, like there was no argument 5 minutes ago, because they don't take it seriously. You know, they're just friends like that, you know. And it's sort of this thing. It's like, what happens at the blackbird's nest stays at the blackbird's nest. We are family. This is our business and it stays right here. So yeah.
All right, Eric, you know, you talked a little bit about you were an engineer at one time.
Yeah.
Becoming an author, how did that happen? I mean, you know, you've got, like, I don't know how many books you have, like over 25 or so?
I think I may be around 25 now.
That's a lot of books.
Yeah, it is. It's, especially when I stack them up and I go like, wow. What's also kind of cool is I can see what I did in 1996. I can see what I did in 97. I can see what I did in 2000. I can see what I did last year, you know. I worked aerospace for 9.5 years at the time it was Rockwell, eventually became Boeing, and got laid off. You know, got laid off. Again, it's like one of those career-changing moments. And I was going back to grad school for computer science, but I had always done stand-up comedy, acting, some writing. And I just felt a shift, like I wanted to do something else. And it's so funny because it's like you sit there and you go like, okay, wait a minute, I've put so much energy into being an engineer. I can't stop. And then part of me was like, yes, you can. You know, so I took that leap of faith, you know, as they say, you know, I took that leap of faith and joined a writing group. And then from there, I started taking classes at community colleges because I wanted to see, like, okay, do I really like this? You know, okay, it's like $5 a unit. Okay, 15 bucks. All right, I'm in, you know. And from day one, it was like I loved it. Again, because I had done so much other stuff. Had written a script, had done stand-up comedy. So all of it so far as trying to craft a story made sense. I just didn't have the stories at the time. And from there to UCLA, I mapped out a program just like I did in engineering. You know, started with intro to everything and just worked my way through up to the classes where we had to submit, say, like 50 pages to get in for working on your screenplay, I mean, for your novel or whatever. So, yeah.
So what does it take to be a stand-up comedian? I mean,
oh, gosh.
With my mind's eye, you have to keep up on the news. You have to know what's current. You have to...
Well, see, that part of your act is the part that becomes a throwaway because it changes every day. I remember watching cats who their whole act was about President Reagan. So I'm dating it now. So, and then what happened was when Reagan was no longer president, they no longer had an act. So you have a lot of people who would build their act that way. It's like if someone is doing a lot of Obama jokes, well, they're about to play out now. So
they're going to be looking for a new job.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, and I've seen comics do that. Some, if they're doing relationship, dating, marriage, that stuff stays. I mean, it never goes away. People who were doing relationship jokes probably in the 80s can tinker with them and they still apply now to a certain degree. But it was the very specific stuff. Cause I would have my act, you know, but it's like you can say, like watch the news, you get something fresh, relatable, put it out there. Hopefully you get some laugh back and then you kind of ease over into segue into, the meat of your act. But it's, I was talking with somebody about that last night. I met a girl, a stand-up comic last night in Detroit. And it's that thing. It's like, you know right away if it works. Like with a novel, you have to write it, put it out, then you wait and see what happens. The comedy, the moment you get to the punchline, you know if it worked. If it's crickets, it didn't work. If there's laughter, it worked. If there's applause, it really worked. You know, because that's how a lot of the stuff we would do, we would structure is like, you know which bits usually got the big laughs all the time. You know what I mean? So if you were trying new stuff and it wasn't working, you would segue back into some of your older stuff, get some laughs again, and then kind of ease back and try some new stuff again. So, cause every night somebody, we would go up, you were always trying to, try something new. You know, that was part of the thrill of it. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm going to do something. I don't know how this is going to go. It's amazing. Every now and then you would find a bit that you thought was just okay. And it would get the hugest laugh. You know, and we would have to videotape ourselves and play back. And I was one of the few comics even then. I wrote everything out like it was a stage play. You know, bits and pieces, segues and everything like that. I told a buddy, I said, I have to do that because what happens is we get real comfortable performing. And so what happens is we add a word, we change a word, we don't realize we did it. And then what happens is now 6 months later, the joke's not funny anymore. Well, we got to go back to the beginning now. Oh, this is what I did. Ah, I should have said this. I suppose it ended with this. Ah, right. You know, and some stuff just on the segue, some stuff, the ordering of your act, you had stuff, strong opening, some good stuff in the middle, and then the strongest stuff at the end. You know, you don't want the, strong stuff in the middle and the okay stuff at the end, because what happens is you leave the stage and people, hey, he was all right. I've seen a lot of comics who say we're doing 45 minutes and the first 30 they were struggling. They just didn't have it. But they had this 15-minute bit that they always ended with and they always got a standing ovation. And I've seen it over and over again. I go like, wow. And every comic was trying to get that 15-minute bit, that closer, that would push them from being either an opening act to a middle act or from a middle act to being a headliner. So, yeah. Every place is a different place, because one night you're at a bar competing with a blender, and the next night you might be at a Coliseum, at a Wilshire E. Bill. It just kind of depends, you know. It's every night was different. Some night it's we would talk about, like, on Friday nights, 7, 9, and 11 would be three shows. 7 o'clock, they weren't drunk enough. 9 o'clock, they were just right. 11 o'clock, they were toasted. They were too drunk. No matter what you did, they weren't going to laugh. But as they left, they would say, "You were funny." But they, you know, they passed out. But it was a great learning experience. I mean, from performing and writing, because even now, one of the characters in The Blackbirds is a stand-up comic, Du Bois Jr. And I've written about three or four stand-up comics, and it's kind of cool to know what goes on. So as I'm writing, I'm not just saying this person's a comic. I have a sense memory. I have a feel for what they do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the research there for that character.
Yeah.
A lot of times, maybe with the cancer, maybe you've had cancer in your family.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to do the research.
You know, because it's so funny. It's like we're all touched by cancer. I can't even tell you the number of cancer stories I've heard over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, from one of my best buddies when I grew up had cancer. We were communicating over Facebook and he was going in for surgery and then just one day he just went away. And social media really has changed the way we deal with death and everything else. I mean, because it feels like, okay, we were just chatting 2 days ago. You were going to the doctor and you stopped posting. Okay, what happened? And then you're gone, you know. You know, even the day Prince passed away. So a lot of people are, you know, it's totally changed everything. It's changed the world, the way we communicate. We get to determine what we think the news should be. And now it's as if the news is following us to see what's trending. So that's what they talk about, because the news used to be, this is the news, this is what you should be focused on. Now it's sort of the dog wagging the tail now, if that's a good way of putting it. So, yeah.
Yeah, because it even seems like that they have more social media, even on the national news.
On the news, yeah.
And it's like, okay,
this is what's trending.
Yeah, right. Find really kind of weird.
Yeah, because again, it shows, okay, so they are following social media. Because before then, there was, this is what the news is going to be today. And now it's, they're looking at social media to see what the news is going to be today. So
it used to be all bad news. If it wasn't bad news, it wasn't news.
Well, they said if it bleeds, it leads, right? So that's what they used to say. So yeah. And I know different areas have different criteria for what they deem as newsworthy. So.
Well, what's next? I mean, Blackbirds is your brand new book.
I'm not sure yet. A lot of fans are clamoring for the return of Gideon, the assassin that I created probably about 8 years ago at this point. But I'll figure it out over the next few weeks. So see what I want to do. I start stuff, but I haven't committed to anything as of yet, you know. And it's always good. I always go back and look over notes for, projects I started didn't complete, or stuff that was in a novel that didn't get used. Because actually, in Blackbirds as well, there's a character, Deborah Dubois, who was in Friends and Lovers again. And in Friends and Lovers, she actually had a point of view. I actually used the stuff that I wrote in 1994 for Deborah in this book. So it matches her voice, but I did it as part of her memoirs. You know what I mean? So, and I looked at it and I was like, wow, this, like, and it really works with Erica. And I think it adds something to Erica's story that I couldn't have gotten any other way. So, yeah.
All right. Well, the book is Blackbirds. If I want to find out about Eric Jerome Dickey, Blackbirds, other books, where in the world would I go?
You can find me at www.ericjeromedickey.com. That's ericjeromedickey.com. And from there, you can link me on Facebook, Twitter, whatever other social media I have at the bottom that you can click and find me.
I think that's that same social media we were just talking about.
That's it, man. It's like, whoa, it's amazing. It's really, really amazing. I mean, years ago, I know I feel like one of those guys, like, a long time ago, back when I was in a covered wagon, but we used to do an event and then remember when you have to take pictures to a 1 hour photo? Or, right. Now it's, before I get home, there's 20 photos of me posted with me wearing what I have on. I said, I haven't even made it home yet. It's like, I haven't even made it out the bookstore yet. That's how instantaneous everything is. And I think that's with everyone having cell phone and able to text, people have changed in a sense where they expect everything to happen instantaneously. You know, back then you used to say, remember, you used to order stuff, it'd be 4 to 6 weeks. Whatever you got, it was 4 to 6 weeks.
You're going to be sending those by drones here pretty
soon. Oh, gosh, I know, man. Well, you know, even now on Amazon, I order something in the morning and it's at the house in the evening. And I'm just like, really? Wow, you know. I remember in the covered wagon, it would take 6 weeks to know.
6 months to go across.
I know.
Well, the book is Blackbirds by Eric Jerome Dickey. Hey, you know, if you're a fan of Eric and you've read his books, you're going to be so happy that maybe some of your favorite characters are back in Blackbirds. I mean, you're going to find out the challenges between these four ladies and perhaps their men and things that have happened.
Yeah.
Jerome, thank you.
That's fine. That's fine. That's fine, Jerome.
I call you Jerome.
That's fine. No, that's fine.
Eric, thanks a lot.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I'm your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Eric Jerome Dickey, author of The Blackbirds.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.